enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good and fire it up with CJ. Log on fireitupwithcj.com and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky. Believe.
Welcome back to Fired Up with CJ on CBS Sky Radio. We're here every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and we do appreciate you listening today. We have a great show, and I am at the CBS headquarters in Michigan, and CJ is in Seattle, and I want to welcome you all to Fired Up with CJ. Before I go to CJ, I want to give you her website. As we all know, it's fireduppwithcj.com. If you go to her website, you can see she has archive shows, she has upcoming shows, events, and things she has going on. So please, while you're listening to the show today, take a moment and go to her website and see everything she has going on there. I was just on it today, CJ.
You were?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Just looking around, seeing what you had going on. And
okay.
It's funny. I forget about past shows sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I go on different websites, and I go on everyone's Facebook, and I stalk all the hosts on our station and everything like that. I always say I'm a cyber stalker, and I just want to tell people she has past shows, she has great guests. You know, check out some of the shows and information you had there.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of feeling a little bit crazed right now about the school year beginning. Are you doing the same thing with your daughter?
Oh, yes. I am running out the door after your show today to go to open house to meet all the teachers. And she's in high school, but this is for the parents so we can go and make sure we have everything for our children. And
yes, I have that tomorrow.
Yeah, and I have it tonight. And my daughter, the Virgo, I always call her my Virgo because she's, Mom, what time are you leaving? Mom, what time are you leaving? Mom, what time are you leaving? And she just got her driver's license this week. So,
whoa.
Yeah, so we have that going on. But
wow.
I'm like, we will be there. I promise you. I'm never late for anything. It's all good. But yeah, the back to school.
Yeah.
Hustle and bustle and getting everything organized.
Okay, it's pure, utter chaos. And I can tell you that our current guest, Richard Moss, his book helped me this morning because I was writing the script for this interview. And frankly, it was the only moment of inner stillness and calm probably in the last 2 or 3 days. So.
Yeah. Well, you have younger children.
My
youngest is in high school. So I've been through that where you have to fill out all the paperwork for the children. You have mounds of paperwork. Now I just give it to them and say, you do it.
Yes.
I'll sign. You tell me where to sign.
No, that happened yesterday. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. Here, fill this all out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I understand that. And I know our guest, I always walk around going, how do I shut it off? Especially at night. How do you shut it off?
Yes. And that's exactly what our guest, Richard Moss, is talking about. Inside out healing. It's about how do we actually, let's face it, the answers are within ourselves. I know that we constantly look for the answers outside ourselves, but really the truest and the purest answers are within ourselves. And how do we shut off all of it? All of the forms that we have to fill out, all the daughters that are asking, sons that are asking for things, driving all over the place. You know, how do we actually keep calm and still? And in the evening, like yesterday evening around 3, I was up thinking about who knows what. It was insane, insane. But I was thinking about Richard, our current guest, who is a renowned physician turned master healer. And today he's going to share with us a process for us to create our own inner silence. Welcome, Richard.
Jay, thank you. I'm sorry I called in a minute or two late. I apologize if I made you nervous.
Oh, you didn't. You didn't make me nervous at all.
We're
just talking. Sandra and I are just chatting along. So, presence. People use it all the time. Some people just think it's the thing you get during Christmas. what is presence? Help us understand what, you know, since you are a master in presence, what is it?
Presence is very distinct from being aware as an ego. You know, you and I, if we operate just from our names, I look out the window, I I hear your voice now. I'm talking on a phone. I look out the window, see the trees and the sky and so forth. We're always in our bodies. We're always present, but we're not very deeply present. So I would say when we start to use the word like really presence, we're talking about a level of awareness that's deeply embodied. So the quality of presence is that the mind sees every perception or where every perception is vivid. And at the same time, the mind is spacious, vast. Now, if I take a medical education like I had, we learn to focus on information. A person working in the stock market is focusing, focusing, focusing. A mother in a kitchen, focusing, focusing, focusing. But they're not present truly because they're not spacious. Spacious means your mind is so vast, it truly has no limit. You're aware of every thought that's coming through your mind, and you either select to be part with that, to participate with that thought and identify with that thought and become the emotional effect or the sensation aroused by that thought, or you observe it's just a thought. So presence, when you're so focused and spacious, every perception is vivid, every sensation is vivid, everything moving through your mind is vivid, and when you're that present, there are very, very few thoughts. And another way to talk about presence is, if something, I'm sure our listeners have watched exceptional athletes, well, they make it look easy, and yet their bodies are extraordinarily awake and simultaneously relaxed. So when we're truly present, not only is every perception vivid and the mind spacious, but the equivalent of that spacious mind is a body that's completely without any tension. It's so relaxed, and yet it's so awake, so completely alert and ready, that it's sort of like, you know, that image in some people will recognize it from Karate Kid, where the little boys, the student is learning how to catch flies with chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
That ready. You
know, yeah, it's a yoga teacher once explained.
Fly out of the air. And yet, when most people are ready like that, they are very tense. And therefore very narrowed, very constricted. So truly to be present, in the sense we're going to discuss it and how you practice it, is that the mind can focus, is focused, every perception, the sensation is very distinct, very vivid, but it is not narrowed. It's vast. It's wide open. And the body is very relaxed and ready to catch a fly in that moment in the air. Step out from in front of a car. Grab a child that's dashing away. You miss absolutely nothing. The body moves without thought, like a martial artist, like any champion athlete.
So what brought to mind when you were talking about in yoga, they have this idea of doing and being at the same time. And so with yoga, you're doing a move where you have to be completely focused and your body has to be relaxed and balanced in order to do a lot of the moves, or you can't do the moves at all. And so or you get hurt because your mind has to be completely monofocused on the task, which is, you know, maybe aligning your body and holding it sideways with your hand off the floor and your leg stuck up in the air. And so it's hard to do that during the day, though. And I think that, you know, I think actually what's interesting is I don't know if I'm deeply present or deeply embodying it. I think I'm paying attention, but I think paying attention is different. When I'm hearing your description of presence, where you're spacious and vast and open and kind of picking up everything. I mean, how many people
When Eckhart Tolle used the expression, the power of now, I mean, the oldest teaching in the world, but he hit a note. The trouble is the word now is just a complete abstraction. What's the power of now? The power of now is that, using your expression, you're paying attention. That's an aspect of it. But if you're paying attention because you're anxious about what's going to happen, that's not really presence. That's contraction. And so can you pay attention in such a way that you miss almost nothing? Rather than paying attention for something? Because paying attention can just be focusing. And focusing is only half the story. There is no such thing as the now. It's a completely abstract concept. What you experience right now depends on whether your body's ready and relaxed. If it's ready and tense, then you're nervous, easily made irritable. Your nervous system gets easily provoked by loud noises or the tone of voice of your partner or the way a child talks to you or how the boss throws you an assignment because you are, you know, ready, but you aren't relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with the mind. If we use the same, the body and the mind are not separate, but we use a different language to talk about them. When every perception is completely vivid, and your peripheral vision is just as engaged as your macula, as the thing that's right in front of you that you're looking at, and you know that the part of a person that's listening to our voices right now is very hard to find. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I ask the audience, find the part of you that's hearing our voices. If I'm in a room and I ask that question, sometimes people's eyes go up because they're thinking. Sometimes all of a sudden a stillness falls over the room. Almost always a stillness falls over the room.
Mm-hmm.
Because the question isn't a question you can answer with a thought. The
mm-hmm.
question actually changes the quality of your attention.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say to our audience, find the part of you that's hearing our voices. In that split second, you become aware in a different way.
Yeah, I definitely, when I did that, I felt the silence within me. Here's the thing that I find tricky. There's kind of this spaciness that I think is also, because it's the tension between the two, because I can get super relaxed and get kind of spacey, where I'm not thinking about anything. Someone will say something to me I'm hearing, but I'm so relaxed that it's a balance between these two things. Because I when I think of the place that you're talking about where I'm so relaxed, like after a massage, let's say, that's when my body is the most relaxed, I wouldn't describe myself as focused either. And it seems like you're asking to be in an in-between place between those two things.
What we're trying to do in our conversation right now is educate ourselves mm-hmm. and educate our listeners. So, yes, everybody knows what it's like to work a long day
mm-hmm.
and have being focused all day and being emotionally aroused all day long by various things. Someone else's behavior doesn't emotionally arouse us. Our judgment of their behavior is what emotionally arouses us.
Mm-hmm.
So we judge constantly ourselves and other people
mm-hmm.
and the situation and the job. I was just doing a one-on-one with a woman from Europe, and it was mostly about her story about her career.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to work and makes herself exhausted because she thinks it's not a job that's really using her skills. And because she thinks that, she exhausts herself.
Mm.
So what most people haven't developed at the end of a busy day like that is that when they go into relaxation, they do exactly what you said. They get spacey.
Mm-hmm.
They have to lose themselves in the TV series. I love TV
mm-hmm.
series. You know, a certain TV series. The TV's gotten, you know, the shows have gotten just so sophisticated, so interesting, so well written and directed.
I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole different universe than when I was watching TV in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I hear you. But when you said so, people relax, like they think of this kind of, okay, I'm present because I'm all relaxed and I'm spacing out watching TV, but that's not really being present either, but it is that relaxed.
Not at all. It's not at all. So I'll give you an example of extraordinary presence. The man, his name is Ueshiba, he's dead now quite a long time, that founded Aikido.
Mm-hmm.
In the final stages of when he would accept you as a student, and in the final stages of his life, he was an old man, and like all old men, our prostate glands get bigger, and our ability to hold urine gets smaller, and so we get up in the night to pee, sometimes a couple of times. Yes. Well, Ueshiba would get up in the night to urinate, walk very quietly in his slippers through the dormitory room where the students slept to the bathroom. And if every one of those students at any time of the dead of night didn't sit up instantly in bed as he walked through, they went home.
Wow.
Okay, so that's... Now, Ueshiba, even in his 70s, could throw men, six and seven at a time, half his age, who had been studying martial arts for, at that point, 10 and 15 years. He could throw them around like they were toys.
Mm.
Because not anything he ever did with a movement came from a thought. And he didn't use energy in the normal sense, his physical energy. His body and his being and the environment and his opponents were all one singular state of consciousness. So that's the mind in spaciousness and the body in profound relaxation. And he was trying to teach that to his students. So you have to be able to go to sleep at night and get the nourishing rest you need. At the same time, be aware enough of your external environment. Special forces soldiers that work in extraordinary situations, they are trained to do this. They don't necessarily get to the same depths that Ueshiba did in his, and his very few close disciples in terms of this depth. I certainly don't have this depth, though I will tend to awaken in the night very easily if there's something that's not appropriate. But the ability to be totally relaxed at the end of the day depends on how all day long you let go of the arousal created by thoughts that make you angry or resentful or hurt or bitter or anxious about the future or judgmental of someone else or sad about the past, regretful about the past, guilty about the past, and on and on and on. We are stimulating ourselves with thought. And at the same time, when natural and normal feelings come up inside of us, we're so far away from our bodies we don't even recognize them.
And actually, we're going to have to close on that fantastic note. We will be right back after the break, and we'll continue our conversation on presence.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Welcome back to Fire It Up with CJ and CBS Sky Radio. Our guest today is author Richard Moss, sharing his work and newest book, Inside Out Healing. I'm Cassandra, and I'm here with you on CBS Sky Radio. Our website is www.newskyradio.com, and CJ's website is fireitupwithcj.com. And now we're going to go right back to CJ and our guest, Richard Moss.
Hey, welcome back to Fire It Up with CJ. And I'm CJ Liu, and we've been talking about presence, and I'm going to slightly switch topic, but presence is still the focus area. Is that that's a logical statement. Presence is still the focus area. So there's a Buddhist quote that says, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And I was sharing with Richard during the break that I took a beach run because I really, really wanted to get exercise, and it was about a 20-minute run that started with a deluge of water, and all my clothes were getting sopping wet. And then it started, morphed into pinpricks of sand mixed with rain that felt like I was just getting acupuncture all over my body. And I thought, well, let's practice what Richard says about pain. I'm in pain right now because I could go into I better go home because it's raining and maybe I'll get sick and all my clothes are sopping wet and I got sand all over me. This is ridiculous. Why am I even running? But then I thought, no, let's not judge this whole experience. Let's just run and just not judge the pain. Not, you know, I feel the pain, but I'm not going to go into it. I'm not going to give it a story or add any energy to it. I'm just going to run. And when I did, I experienced the most magical moments because I saw the expansiveness of the beach. I saw these beautiful, exquisite patterns in the sand and the waves that I would never have seen if it weren't storming. And I think that honestly is a benefit of presence, right? You see and experience the world in this magical way that you would never experience if you weren't in that deep embodied state. Am I right, Richard? What is it like for you?
It's exactly like that for me. And you know, you described what I said. Every perception is vivid.
Yeah.
You did it very much more poetically and with more sensual detail, the rain, the patterns on the water. But that's exactly what it means. And you reached it simply because you let go of the thinking mind as a filter between you and your experience and the judging ego. And which is not our friend. It wants to make us special. So you would have been special victim if you decided to turn back. And instead you just dropped it and became someone just being.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of the mind in that state, which we can call presence, is that they're wide open. The word spacious is the best one I've been able to find.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, everything you're experiencing is so precise, so vivid, so alive.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel so alive.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you take the exact same situation, let's say you were me 4 months and a half ago, where in a matter of days I went from being able to run a half marathon or ride my bike 50 miles or walk in the mountains or even mountaineer, and I'm 66, and suddenly something went out. It wasn't sudden. I carried extraordinarily heavy bags on the Paris metro, and bam, out went my back, and that triggered my hip, and I couldn't walk. And I was in continuous pain, and I was in pain in most positions. And instantly, I became a person who had to come home from Europe in a wheelchair through the airports. I've been in wheelchairs in every flight since then. I have not had a single minute of working in my garden, let alone walking in the mountains. I haven't walked longer than 400 paces in 4 months. And I've never been happier, fuller, clearer in any stage of my life than I am right now and have been. And my, life partner could tell you the exact same thing. I'm a little bit more work, as she admits, but very pleasant to work with or work for.
That's shocking.
So the point is, if I put myself in the past and remembered the man I described to you, who was athletic and so forth, I could easily say, oh, my life is not as good now. In fact, what I learned is I'm not dependent on exercise to feel good, and many, 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 many people use exercise as a drug, not as a form of celebration. They don't even want to be doing it, so they put headphones on or they're on a treadmill watching a TV. They don't actually want to be where they are. And I want to be right where I am, and I want to be right where I am without a story, and I've been practicing it for decades. It's my life, it's my path, it's what I teach. And so this change in my body and health had absolutely no effect on my heart. And it didn't diminish the vividness of colors or sensation, although quite a bit of sensation at times isn't pleasant. I work with people who are ill, and it's not their illness that we ever work with. It's what they tell themselves about their illness, how they're disappointing their families, or how they're letting down someone, or how their life will never be as good again. And every one of those thoughts is suffering. That's why suffering is optional.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think it and you're awake and you hear that thought and you feel instantly the drop in your energy, the contraction, the closing down inside of you, the sense of being smaller that those kinds of thoughts create, you just stop. So while pain is what it is, suffering is optional because we create it by believing the stories we tell ourselves, or we create it by running away from feelings that every human being has to learn to make a great big home for. And those are every kind of threatening feeling. So let's say it's fear in every form, every disguise, every shape it takes. Until you stop living your life to be safe and instead start living your life to make a big home for fear, you'll never be safe. No amount of money, no amount of possessions, not the right woman, not the right man, not the best children, not the best schools, nothing makes a human being safe when they're running away from fear.
I have so many questions. I don't even know where to begin. But I'm gonna zoom back to what you're saying. Is that when you have these debilitating thoughts of I'm disappointing my family, I'm not as good as I used to be, and you start closing down. It sounds like it's emotional suffering that then literally creates a physiological response, and then creates more pain, right? And so it seemed from reading your book that the emotional pain creates more physical pain in the end. So all the stories that we tell ourselves create physical pain too, right?
Well, yes, but I've traveled the world. I've taught in 17 countries. The greatest suffering isn't physical. The greatest suffering isn't the disease. It isn't old age. It's the stories people tell themselves and the area, the deepest area of suffering. It doesn't matter if you're in the Middle East or in Europe or in South America, Asia, North America, it's all around relationships.
Wow.
95% of all emotional suffering is relationship related. I'm picking the number out of my hat because
empirical.
That's not that as someone's quantified. That's my subjective observation of working with thousands and thousands and thousands of people in 17 different countries. Relationship with the boss, with a coworker, with children, husband, spouse, and of course with ourselves. That right. is the greatest source of suffering.
What, and so go, linking that to the thing that you said, we can never run away from our fear. What are the typical fears that people are expressing to you about relationships? And how? And if we don't run away, what do we do?
The typical fear is that I'm not loved, I'm not lovable, I'll be abandoned, I'll mm-hmm. be alone all my life, especially for women. They reach a certain age, some women all over the planet are getting empowered, and they're choosing not to stay in destructive relationships. That is emotionally, you know, non-alive relationships. No one should stay in an abusive relationship. But these women are choosing not to stay in dead relationships. And yet they leave and find it's not so easy to find a companion. And that longing for companionship or the suffering when you're in a relationship and the other person isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't listen and doesn't respond. That's just, so the feeling, the sensation is a feeling of abandonment or emptiness or alonement or worthlessness or unlovableness. And it's all fear.
Mm.
It's all one sensation. Fear has a thousand names, fear of heights, fear of aloneness, fear of abandonment. There's thousands of names, and some of them, you know, are really interesting names, like claustrophobia or agoraphobia, you know, great words. But it's only one sensation at different scales of intensity. And what you have to learn is that there is no way to escape that sensation except to make a bigger space to hold it, like a tempest
okay.
in a teapot.
You've got
to dance with it. We'll talk about it more.
All right, so bigger space to dance with and be with your fear. So in our next segment, we're going to – let's take the one about relationships and, you know, what do you do if you're not in a loving relationship and how we can actually use some of the tools. You have a mandala that you use and a great structure for kind of helping people through that. So next up, we'll be doing a checkup on your mind. The doctor's in the house. We'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. Today I'm Fired Up with CJ. We have author Richard Moss, and his book is Inside Out Healing. You can find him at richardmoss.com. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio. We're going to go right back to CJ.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So in the first segment, Cassandra, you were sharing how your mind is just, you know,
yeah,
mind too,
like
because
crazy.
It's the beginning of the school year. And all of us have those times where we are thinking about a thousand things at one moment, and not necessarily in a present, deeply present, deeply embodied way, but in a frenetic internet kind of way. And in the previous segment, Richard was saying 95% of his empirical study on people that he's talked to, 95% of the time it's relationship issues or people's relationship with themselves, relationship with others. It's about relationships. And so what I thought would be interesting is to take his model that he has in his book called Inside Out Healing, and it's called the Mandala of Being, the four places of mind where the mind goes when attention leaves now. And so I looked at this model in his book, and it says when you're not in the now, you're basically either going into the future and planning out your future, my favorite. You're looking into your past and being nostalgic and thinking about the past, or your thoughts are thinking about you other people, like the people who are hurting me, irritating me, or causing me pain. Or you're thinking about you and how you're inadequate, shameful, guilty, or whatever. So I looked at this model where it basically is a simple model. You're either thinking about these four things, the future, the past, you or someone else, others, that are affecting you. And I tried to break this model, and I couldn't, because every one of my thoughts fell into these four categories. And I thought to myself, now why wasn't I able to come up with this model? You know, it's so simple. But in its simplicity, it was brilliant. So, Richard, tell us a little bit more about this model. I mean, how it is just so brilliant. It's so simple. It's brilliant.
and how someone would use it, you know, the people that you've used this with your relationships, how do you use these four different places in helping someone get back to the now?
Okay. Well, in relationships, of course, we're telling ourselves stories about our partners, or we're telling ourselves stories about the relationship itself.
Mm-hmm.
We have beliefs about how the relationship should be, and those beliefs are not necessarily conscious, but they're there. And every time we end up in conflict with someone, we end up being in conflict because we're reacting to what they say to us, which comes from the stories they tell themselves that they're not conscious of. And those stories are judgments, maybe they're judgments of their partner, and maybe they're judgments of themselves. And as you said, maybe they're going back into the past and remembering how good the love was when we first fell in love, and why isn't it that way now? Or, because the question is never helpful until you ask the right question. We'll maybe talk about that another time. But when you say, why isn't it helpful, why isn't it like that now? You're really saying, it isn't like that now. It's the righteous brothers. We've lost that loving feeling.
Mm-hmm.
This work says there is only the present moment. There is only now. My work says that. The center of the mandala. Mandala is a word in Sanskrit that means circle. In the East, they are forms of art that represent the journey of consciousness. Usually they'll have a Buddha, some, you know, awakened or peaceful figure at the center. And then there's always four basic directions. And then there are more complicated mandalas. Nature is full of mandalas, like a sunflower or a daisy.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's strongly oriented toward the center and yet pulls you toward the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what pulls us to the periphery of life are the judgments and beliefs about ourselves, like you mentioned, the judgments and beliefs we hold about other people, about money, about God, about religions and other political persuasions, and anything else that's other. You know, the way a lumberer thinks about trees is very different than the way an environmentalist thinks about trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're constantly either going into the past, and by telling ourselves or inviting the same images from the past and interpreting them the same way right now, we create in the present moment the same emotional dynamic of the past, which could be guilt or regret or sorrow or anger. So we have a positive reminiscence that makes us look back at the past and wish it was as good now, or a negative reminiscence that makes us look back at the past. And in the present moment, it can make us unhappy, scared, you know, just, and our fear would be that we'll repeat it. So we go into the future and we're afraid not to repeat the past, and we're hoping to have a better future. But the hoping is all built on something that has to happen as opposed to what is happening. So hope is a kind of lie that everybody wants and needs, and a lot of psychological, you know, effort is put into teaching people to be hopeful, whereas a person who's really in the present doesn't need hope at all, not an iota of hope.
Well, because they're accepting what is. They're not trying
exactly,
to have everything be better or worse.
They're at one with what is, so they don't have to hope. And they're not going to be telling themselves a story about the future that's scaring the heck out of them. So in a relationship, what I will do with people is get both individuals to start looking. My work with couples is almost my most passionate place, and I would do that with my life partner, Annalisa. But nobody can do the work just in the couple. They have to do the work in themselves too. And so that work is the same work everywhere. It's imagine you're in a Harry Potter world.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this mandala like a compass on you. The North Pole is future stories. The South Pole is past stories. The West Pole is stories about yourself. The East Pole is the East direction is all the stories and judgments about other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you put this little thing on a chain and you wear it around your neck, your little Harry Potter mandala of being, Richard Moss mandala of being compass. And every time your thinking pulls you away from your body and the present moment, the center of the mandala, the now, and pulls you so far away that you lose connection with what we talked about earlier, the vividness of perception, the spaciousness of mind, being really in your body, very awake but relaxed. So the thinking pulls you away, and the Harry Potter compass goes, wake up, wake up. You're making a judgment of yourself, and it's creating depressive tendency in you. Oh, wake up, wake up. Now you're talking about yourself, making judgments, and now it's making you superior and grandiose. Or, oh, now you're too far in the future, and you're scaring yourself silly about money. Come back, start now. So the compass wakes you up. See, nobody can, I learned this long ago, you cannot teach a person how to be present. I work in deep retreats. I work in 9-day retreats, 10-day retreats, 4-day gatherings, occasionally short things like weekends. But the main effort is always to get a person to experience who they are in the present moment, in their bodies, without a thought, to feel that alive. And almost always what happens is there's forgiveness spontaneously happens, compassion spontaneously happens, love spontaneously happens, but they're constantly pulled back out to the periphery and get lost again and again in the me stories, the you stories, the past stories, the future stories, and they do that in their couple. They do that in their relationship. They do that with their children. You know what the biggest child story parents tell about their children? Almost every story a parent has, every judgment of the child, that they're not getting a job, or they're with the wrong crowd, or they don't do their homework, and they're not studying, it's all because the parent wants to feel safe. It's not about the child at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when when an adult wakes up to their narcissistic, selfish desire for their child to succeed so they will feel safe, that's not love of your child. That's not attention to your child. That's not even knowing your child, and your child knows it. So they don't listen to you. Mm. They can't trust you because deep down in the energy of the relationship, they know you may love them, but they know that what you're telling them isn't about love of them. It's about making you, mommy, or you, daddy, safe.
Right.
All they have
it's
to do is
the
conform.
You're focusing about their future and going into all sorts of fear scenarios, and they kind of sense it on some level. And it's the opposite of that center place in that mandala. The center is the nowness, and when you are in that place, it is where you experience compassion and forgiveness and love of yourself, of your children, of other people. I think that that's probably why I think going into that center place is so important. It's because that's where all the good stuff is.
Well, that's where, as soon as a parent sees what those stories about their children are doing to them and feels what they're doing to them in their own bodies and doing to the relational connection, the relational linkage with their own children, and they step back into the now and drop the story, suddenly they experience immediately a new relational linkage with their children and a much healthier state of mind and body in themselves. And when they go home having done that work, suddenly the kids feel it. And because the relational quality is what happens. When you're in the me, you, past, and future stories, you're actually not in relationship to yourself, so you're not in relationship to anyone else. So you're either in agreement or conflict, and mostly you're into socializing without anything of any true significance being shared. Because if we start to get to something of true significance, we have to go through fear, which means we have to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And we don't yet know how to do that. Most people, their busyness, their talking, their work, their doing, their possessions are all ways of defending themselves against vulnerability. And vulnerability is the healthy relationship to fear.
Mm-hmm.
You don't follow fear. You're not obedient to fear, but you're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't control the future. No one ever could.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to be safe.
Yeah. So you're saying it's holding the bigger space to contain the fear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I hope people will read the book and listen, you know, and internalize that model the way you did, because I've watched it change lives, thousands and thousands of lives. Not only that, once you start down this path and you practice it for 10 years, your life is utterly changed. It's actually changed within 4 months or 2 months, but it's utterly, you're unrecognizable to yourself in a few years.
Mm.
I mean, you don't even know that a human being can be what you've turned into.
Okay, well, that is the biggest promise ever. I can't wait to try. I'm going to see. Talk to me in 4 months and see what happens. Okay, so we have author of Inside Out, Richard Moss. We will be right back, and we're going to be talking more about the ego. We'll be right back.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And Fire It Up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky.
Sky.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. This is Fired Up with CJ. Today's guest is author of Inside Out Healing, Richard Moss, here on CBS Sky Radio. I'm Cassandra, and I'm going to welcome back CJ and Richard Moss.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. You know what, Cassandra? I feel a calming presence affecting both of us, and I think that calming presence is Richard Moss.
Well, Yes, he has a wonderful calming voice, and I'm really interested in his book to see if he can calm you and I both down. Because I'm sure right now in both of our heads, we will both admit we're 4 hours ahead, thinking, yeah, what do we have to do?
I'm in that future Mandela. I'm on that quadrant.
Yes.
I went to a silent retreat, and basically what I found is, like, I'm thinking about the future probably 80% of the time. Planning, future.
We have to learn how to slow it down and calm our mind.
But it's so interesting because your voice has slowed down, and mine has too. Pretty soon I'll be asleep. By the end of the interview, I'll be asleep. Richard, what have you done to me? Okay, so here's
what we're talking about. You asked what presence is. It does travel. It does transmit through the voice.
Yeah.
The groundedness in the body, that the thoughts that I share come from my lived experience and have grounded in my body, that, you know, what you're commenting on, not to say anything special about me, but that is a fact.
Yeah.
I gave a program in Bogota, Colombia, at a major university, and I gave a talk in Bogota. And the man who was the organizer and also did the interpreting, English to Spanish, Spanish to English, said, and he's a rock musician there, a very well-known rock musician in Colombia. And so there's this 66-year-old North American white man with gray silver hair sitting next to a 32-year-old guy with dreads, black beard, black stubble beard, dreads down to his waist, right? And he's interpreting me. At the end, he said, you know, one of his dearest friends, who is the most agitated, can't sit still, legs jumping, arms jumping person, was in the audience, and he said, I watched him, and he didn't move for the whole hour and a half.
Wow.
Didn't move. And that's what happens in the room, usually. The people, tears, I see tears a lot just flow, because it, I think they're tears of recognition. People see things that they know are true and hear it and feel it. But it does come through the voice. And so that's a really good way for you to know how deeply embodied a person is. Mm-hmm. And boy, to be in this kind of voice when you're dealing, let's say, in your couple with very difficult stuff, means that you've put your ears in your heart, your listening is in your heart, and you've made your heart bigger than the room the two of you are in, maybe bigger than the house, maybe bigger than the city. You visualize that heart so enormous until there's room for your partner to be so true, so real, and then you can talk, you can listen, and boy, it becomes such profound intimacy. Mm. You know, when we can do that with each other, at the time, sometimes very difficult stuff gets spoken about, but the relationship thrives. You know, you feel the energy that is that third presence that is the relationship. The next thing that people know, that the whole rest of the day, the next day, They just like being near each other because they learn to listen. And so that's part of my work, is teaching people how to listen and how to listen with a big heart. And it comes through the voice.
Yeah. And it's a cyclical thing, because I'm sure when you see their heart opening and their presence being felt, that it then affects you too, right? Because much like your voice is affecting them in a calming presence, their joy and expression and love for each other is then coming back to you.
Sure.
I don't know. That's what I would guess would happen.
Well, if it's a talk and I see someone, you know, five rows back or eight rows back, just sitting, you know, without any, you could project into someone's non-expression a lot. And I've learned to not do that. But if I see someone who's really looking and there's tears in their eyes, that's positive reinforcement. But I'll tell you, learning in a deep, intimate relationship to let, when I'm with Annalise and she's telling me something really hard, I immediately feel the part of me that wants to defend or rationalize or go into my head. And instead I just go deeper into my body and literally visualize my heart getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, because I do not want to miss the single thing she wants to teach me or penetrate me with. And I think that's something men are not yet really ready for. I mean, we're totally ready for it, but haven't learned it yet, to let their woman penetrate them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do, then the relationship thrives.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
How long have you been in relationship, and how, I mean, you said earlier that you couldn't even believe that you've been in this relationship, and how have you seen it evolved as you've been able to open up more and more and allow her into your space?
We actually haven't been living together that long, a few years. We've worked together for 12 years, and we've been friends for 27 years, acquaintances, friends for 27 years.
Oh, wow.
But she's walked the same, in her own way, this path that I walk, and she's walked many other paths. And then, you know, as we started working together, and then started teaching together, eventually we became partners.
Yeah, and beautiful. So many beautiful stories.
But yesterday we were doing one of these conversations I'm describing where I had to let my heart get really big.
Mm-hmm.
And every day. You know, we set aside time for special conversations, but at any moment I'm always listening because I want us to invent, in a certain sense, through how we are present with each other, the deepest intimacy we can possibly experience. And, you know, it's broader than the word intimacy, broader than just sexual, I mean.
Yeah. I'm just imagining telling my husband, like, hold on, I'm really pissed off at you right now. And I need to see if I can expand my heart. And then we'll talk afterwards. Hold on.
Well, actually, it's his job to expand his heart. It's your job not to attack him.
It's your job
to find a way to tell him what you really want him to know that doesn't come just from attack. And it's his job to make a really big space and let it in and let him feel you, really feel you, get really where you're coming from, why it's so important to you. And then digest that because he's felt it, because it's living in his body, before he opens his mouth.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it goes both ways. That's how it should be. That's how it can be between people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, teaching people vulnerability in a relationship, Annalise and I were on Skype yesterday with a couple in France doing exactly what I'm describing to you. We were guiding them. We were listening as their relationship, as they talked to each other in this very specific
mm-hmm.
way. And as the relationship, from time to time, we would comment on how they had listened to each other or how they had mirrored each other. And we'd tell them when the relationship felt wonderful.
Mm,
and,
that's
of course,
sweet.
By the end, they felt wonderful.
Yeah.
The relationship felt wonderful. And we were only 5,000 miles away.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. What a fantastic book, Inside Out Healing, Transforming Your Life Through the Power of Presence. I have to tell you, I've tried a bunch of the tools in the book. They really work, and it is a very special book. So thank you for writing the book. Thank you for being here. I'd love to have you on again. And I hope your healing process with your back and everything is fast and quick. Although I know you're in your happiest moments at this point.
I trust it. The worst that can happen is I'll have a hip replacement or they'll do some sort of back surgery, and then I'll do what I can do. My life may have changed in some ways, but the present never changes.
Yeah. All right. Well, many blessings to you. Thank you for being on the show. Folks,
make sure you
tune in September when we'll be talking about back to school. And thanks again.
If people want help learning this, they should go to my YouTube channel because there's lots of short instructional videos.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Okay.
And there's also on the website a free e-course that tens of thousands of people have used to learn to do the mandala for themselves.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so it's richardmoss.com.
Correct.
All right. Thank you again. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
it's been a pleasure and a privilege.